for everyone here, all you fellow Degens at the Degen Aussie Apes. I mean, we're super excited today to have Zenica from the Zen Academy. I mean, we're talking founder, CEO of the Zen Academy in the 333 Club. We're talking about the co-host of the Two Bored Apes podcast, the podcast host of Zen Chats, and also the Chief Zen Officer at Blur.io. Man, is there anything you can't do, Zenica, bro? I'm getting high blood pressure just reading that.
I got a lot of balls in the air. It's a bit much, but
it's like a 10-minute intro.
Yeah, well, that's a bit ridiculous.
Man, finding the time. I mean, I love your ethics. I love your passion. You're coming from a base of education. I know you're doing a lot of stuff with the Zen Academy and the relaunch with the chess, which we definitely want to really deep dive into that. But where did it all start? I mean, how was your entry into crypto NFTs? When did this all sort of drop, man?
Yeah, it all really started February, March of last year, 2021. Like, I first heard about crypto in 2017, but, you know, I dabbled with Ethereum and Bitcoin a bit, and then it was a crazy bull market and the bear market came and I was like, okay, that was a fun experiment. Let's go back to real life. I was actually a professional poker player before this. That's what I did for 16 years. And then, February, March last year, I had some friends that were into NFTs telling me about it. And then first I thought it was some scam, like what are these, this Ponzi cult thing that they're getting involved with, thousands and thousands of dollars for like an internet JPEG. It didn't make any sense. Eventually though, came around and I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, I kind of get it now. It clicked, and then, yeah, that was the entryway into the space.
Do you think the poker, because it's funny, I was listening to a talk, the space you're in with Little Nouns, and you were mentioning about, you know, you're a bit modest with the professional side of the poker player, because you guys are holding poker championships inside your community at the moment, aren't you, as well?
We have a couple weekly poker nights, yeah, that are, yeah, they're a lot of fun, and, I mean, they're not anything super competitive or anything like that, but it's just for a bit of fun. That's a whole other story.
Poker's fun, man. I'm a big fan of Texas Hold'em, yeah, and I feel a bit of a crossover with our market in regards to the mentality, the strategies behind, because I mean there's a scam every sort of second day, every minute in this market. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's really cool you guys taking the approach with the Zen Academy and teaching people, because that was our ethos as well for the Degen Aussie Apes. It wasn't a monetary thing for us. It was, we're in memes, we're degening, we've been scammed, you know, I'm sure like yourself, excess of six figures. And we thought, well, this needs to come to a stop. And how can we bridge that across to our network and educate the people, which, I mean, there's no one that's done it like you guys. You guys have really hit the nail on the head, especially that it's been going, what, for the last 12 months now?
Yeah, almost coming up on a year. So this is, what, November 5th? We launched November 9th. It's been a crazy year. But, yeah, it's been a wild ride.
I really like as well with Zen Academy, you went to the trouble of the three different tiers. So I feel like it really works with everyone, no matter what level you are, and you can kind of step up or step down. How did that all come about? Because like I get the idea, you're all about education and giving back, and it's more, it's not just a PFP, it's not another ape, it's actually something you really resonate with. So how did the idea for the tiers come about?
Yeah, so when we first launched in, again, November last year, a year ago, we launched with two tiers, and it was one called the 333 Club that was really sort of like the top tier designed for other founders and builders in the space that maybe need advice, consulting services, and just to build this smaller, exclusive, close-knit community. And then we had the Zen Academy Genesis tier, and that was literally everyone else, including like pure beginners, but then those that are like experienced and been in the space for a while, and DJs and artists and collectors, and it was sort of difficult to sort of manage a community that's that sort of wide ranging. And it's like you create content or you host events that you, it's very difficult to cater to both the pure beginner, just in like the words that you use, the terminology, because there's a lot to learn to begin with, as well as trying to, you know, chat with someone who's been in the space for a year. So after, you know, 6-8 months of it, we started thinking, well, okay, this has been good, but we'd like to sort of change it up a little bit. And the other issue we had was that for sort of a beginner getting into the space, like when we launched, the token price was 0.033 ETH. So it was like meant to be fairly cheap and affordable. Mm. But then it reached this point where now it's like 0.4 or something, 0.5 ETH. And now all of a sudden you're talking about, that's a lot of money for someone to sort of buy into an NFT, a membership token, especially if they're just starting out. And so we wanted to make a way for the existing community to sort of be basically elevated into this middle tier and feel like they're part of this more advanced crew, and then open up the bottom tier to basically literally everyone by introducing this new free student ID NFT that anyone can get. And that was like the thinking behind it.
Do you feel as though this was really the driving factor behind your workshops and then all the media? I was going through the webpage and all the media presence that you guys have. You've got all the LinkedIn stuff. You've got all the YouTube. You've got all the courses. I mean, the one that I loved was the 30 days of NFT course. I thought that was brilliant. Every day you're getting a 5-minute snippet and you feel like you're constantly learning and evolving. And the cool part was, it's you start. So when I sign up is when I start. And if Shaheen signed up 2 days later, and I thought that was brilliant.
Yep.
So would you say this education seems to be something throughout everything that you put your hands on?
Kind of, yeah. Like everything has some sort of education content side to it. So like the 30 days of NFTs, it's my favorite thing that we've done in the whole year, really. And like you said, it's really basic. And if anyone's interested, 30daysofnfts.com. We were very lucky to get that domain as well. But yeah, you just go, and it's designed for the total beginner. Like my mom is taking it. It's really for like people that have zero understanding and like they want to know, like day one is what is an NFT? And then it takes you, what is a blockchain, all the way through. But then, you know, we have against the more advanced people in the community, and that then we're like doing things like teaching them maybe how to navigate a gas war, or that, you know, find projects before they mint and all that kind of stuff, which is, again, it's educational focus. And even if it's not purely like teaching them, it's like we always have that that side to what we're doing, just because it's really what started us off and something that we're going to continue with.
Man, I love that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. I was listening to you guys talking about, you know, you had your town hall. Just was it yesterday, I believe, or the day before? Maybe a couple of days ago.
Honestly, somewhere in the last 2 days.
Like, bro, you've got so...
Everything's
a mess.
Daylight savings, it's all a mess. Sleep is messed up. It's somewhere in the last two... This week.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great idea because we were having a chat just literally the other day. We get a bit technical when we're talking meme coins and things like that. Is contracts renounced? You know, are they verified? Have the developers done previous rugs? And we start getting really deep, and it's like, okay, we've got to tailor this back because a lot of people are not understanding the trial of fire that we've all gone through. And you know, they see these ridiculous wins like Art Gobblers or Goblins, which I believe you were a holder of about 60 Goblins at a stage.
At one point, I got lucky on that one. The thing is, like Goblins was great. I like the trial of fire phrase, by the way. That's exactly how it is. We all get burned.
It really is.
People remember the Goblins. What they might not see is like the 20 other degen projects I've minted afterwards that all went to zero. It's like, you get some big wins, but you miss a lot, and it's very risky. And yeah, you got to be careful when you're talking about that to people, because
Well, I feel you were just hearing when, you know, you only spoke about it for about 10 seconds, but even then you were quite tactical because you did miss out on the mint, but then you swept on a secondary market. And a lot of people might sit at times, especially as they're learning, you know, if the volume's there and, you know, the talk is there, that's a fantastic sweep. I feel that's quite calculated. But yeah, we hear a lot more of the wins at times than the losses. I mean, we are members of the Consortium Key. We both hold Consortium Keys and we've been trading our meme coins that way. And, you know, you see a lot of wins on, you know, Twitter and things like that. I caught a 20X, I caught a 5X, but you're not seeing those losses. And that's that real trial by fire.
Yeah.
Have you found, you know, dealing on the education side? Because what I sort of took was you guys started this a year ago and you didn't really know at the time where Zen Academy could end up. Are you finding now that there's some runs on the board? I mean, where is the education level sitting for most people? Are they fairly new to this market? Do they have an in-depth understanding, or are you guys tailoring the course to suit degens, to suit new onboarders? How far is this going?
Yeah, again, it's really everywhere because there's so many people that have no idea about NFTs still. So like every single day, every single week, there's new people joining the space. And so they're starting out at pure beginners. But then like 2 months ago, you had people joining and they're now a little more advanced. And 6 months ago, you had people that joined. And so it's impossible to sort of create one type of content. You have to really, our approach is to everyone. So we've got 30 days of NFTs for the pure beginners, but then we have, I've created a couple of more structured courses. One is like how to launch an NFT project. That's for people that are a little more advanced. They want to launch it. There's one that's how to build a community in this space. And then we have like channels and Discord that are a little more about like trading, and it really is all over the place. And I think that always there'll be sort of, I think at least for the next several years, this big focus on onboarding. Eventually we'll get to a point where people won't necessarily need to be onboarded because it'll just be so easy and sort of like accessible, kind of like no one needs to be onboarded to the internet today or email today. It's very easy, but we're a long way away from that still.
Yeah, it's a bit of a road. I mean, because you've got a lot going on with the four phases that you're currently doing with that transition across. One thing I was super bullish on, and I'd love for you to explain to our guests the reasoning why, was moving across from the 1155s to the 721 tokens. For me, being in this market, super bullish move. I mean,
it's a big fantastic migration. Everyone's doing it. It's a big migration. Well,
we had Bears Deluxe do that. That was a vote. And, you know, we migrated our Bears across for those that remember. I mean, don't buy Bears at 1.8 ETH. Don't buy the tops, guys. You know, it's, if you're silly enough to buy the rips, buy the dips. But I'd love for you to explain as to why you guys are moving across to the 721s now and why someone like us would see that as, you know, quite a bullish move.
Yeah, so I guess just to take a step back, there's two NFT standards at the moment, ERC 1155 and ERC 721. And effectively, ERC 721 has like more functionality. Everyone has an individual token, and there's just more things you can do with it. They're more interoperable with other apps and programs and contracts. ERC 1155s are a basic, simple, but easy way to create them and mint them, and they were cheaper gas-wise. Like when we launched in November last year, gas was crazy. It was like $200 to mint, $100 to mint. And with ERC 1155, it costs the exact same if you're going to mint 10 or 50 or 5 versus 1. If you're going to transfer that many, it's all the same cost. So we were like, well, we don't really need something crazy fancy. We're just doing something basic, a membership token. Let's just do ERC 1155. But now, you know, coming up to a year, we want to do a PFP project. We want to give everyone their own unique NFT. And that's kind of an oxymoron or something. Something there. It's a bit redundant. But we want to give everyone, like, their own individual tokens. ERC 1155s aren't exactly, like, they're all the same art. And in order to sort of expand the utility and some of the things we want to do, we have to make that upgrade, that transition. So that's what we're starting later this month.
Yeah, it's super cool because, I mean, currently you have a Zen Academy Genesis token, which is on hold, I think, at the moment for selling and things like that. And then that will be upgraded to a Zen chest. And that chest will then be burnt for your PFP. So no one knows what the PFP is yet. Artwork hasn't been revealed, hasn't been dropped. I think a couple of teasers might be out there, but I mean, you're keeping us wanting more, my friend, you know? It's,
yeah, the art is a closely guarded secret where, well, I mean, partially because this is something we're releasing in Q1 2023, so we got, you know, a few months still before it is going to be shown, and we're in the early stages of the development. We want to have some flexibility to sort of, you know, we're going down a couple of directions and we're seeing what is going to make the most sense, and like, I'm 90% sure we've got the art style locked in and we're like, working in that direction, but just in case we don't want to show something and then change our mind later and be like, oh, this is actually what we're doing. And we want to keep some suspense back and share as we go along and when it's right, but also just we're still a while off, and we want to sort of keep the focus on the chests and the transition and then the student IDs, which are coming in December, January. So I'm really excited to share, but we've got a few things before then that I'm also excited to share.
Yeah, I think it's really smart. I noticed a lot of last projects where developers would work and founders would work, and then they drop 4 months of stuff in one go. And the hype dies down over time. We know what this market is. I've never seen any market that emotions, like I remember with the Bored Ape Yacht Club when Rider Rips came out, there was so much noise for a couple of weeks, then it all sort of fizzles away. I feel we've got a very short, we move on too quick.
It's way too quick with the way we move on. But you guys, you're drip feeding us and it's working. We're very excited.
Yeah. I'm excited because, you know, I see a lot of what we do, you know, what you guys are doing as well. I mean, we've just got the one podcast. You have multiples. And you also have multiple streams for the Zen Academy for your media. You have audio, you have visual, and you have writing. Correct me if I'm wrong. I may have missed a podcast. So we have the Two Bored Ape Zen Chats and Million Dollar Zen. Was that a podcast I missed? Is that a third one I've missed, Zenica man?
And you haven't missed it because it's not out yet. But we're working on it. We've been working on it for the last couple of months. And yeah, I'm really excited about it. It's going to be me and a friend of mine. His name's Zenis. So Zen and Zen. So it's, that worked out perfectly. It's really funny. I didn't know him before that we met during in this space, but he has a lot of experience sort of working with kind of Web2 founders, entrepreneurs, coaching them and people like that. And then obviously I have the experience in Web3, and we intended to be like an interview show where we bring on guests who've sort of built successful businesses in Web2 or Web3 and talk about what it is to sort of build a successful business, run a community, run a company, all of that kind of stuff. So yeah, you haven't missed it. It's just not out yet. It's probably still a month or two away.
I will be listening. I will be subscribing and giving it 5 stars. Nice. For everyone that's watching this, guys, please, or listening to this, if you want to learn, you have to follow the Zen Academy. You need to listen to these podcasts. You need to watch the YouTube channels. I mean, because the visual side, we got YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, workshops. I know everyone,
everything you could want.
I know everyone right now, and I have to ask this question, is you must be an extremely focused and structured individual, which I'm sure that skill set has evolved over time. How do you find, don't be modest here, man, how do you find time managing all this? Because we drop one podcast, we're editing for a couple of hours, we're doing our socials. A lot of people are building their content. Right now, we understand that attention is currency. You're either a content creator or you're a consumer of that content. How are you finding time managing such different hats?
Well, I mean, it's not me. It's not just me. I have a whole team now that's helping me. So a year ago, it was just me and I was doing all of it myself. But I had much less content. I had my newsletter and then I was tweeting and then I had Two Bored Apes, the podcast that I co-hosted with a friend, and we were able to manage that. And then as time's gone on and Zen Academy launched and built up and the content started increasing, now we have a content manager. Now we have someone that manages the email. We do have someone that manages the email, but someone that manages the podcast, the audio, the video, the editing, the show notes, the publishing, all of that kind of stuff. So I just record the thing and then it goes off and someone else cuts it together. They put the clips out on Instagram. They put the clips out on YouTube, on TikTok. And so it's really just me being propped up by an incredible team. So it's really a joint effort. And I think that, yeah, like if you're trying to start out, I think focus on one thing, one or two things, do that well, build an audience, start, you know, maybe trying to monetize it and bring in some revenue, and then look to hire people on to help you. And that way you can scale and move to many more things, and then you can start appearing everywhere.
So it's interesting that you talk about this, and one of the things that I've seen that I like is you've always been not against VC funding. It's not like you hate VCs, but it was more sticking to the pure idea, and you didn't want to taint the project, and you didn't want to be led down the path by someone who has the money calling the shots. Did you find at the start and building up to this point, was it hard to resist the VC funding and that hand because it would have made things a bit easier? Would you have taken it looking back at some points, or stick to the goal, the project, the vision, and you wouldn't change a thing?
I wouldn't change a thing at this point. I think very happy with where we are and like the autonomy that we have and the ability to sort of do what we want and move in the directions we want and build at the pace that we want. Like sure, we could have taken VC funding a year ago, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, and maybe built up things a little more quickly and had like a more fully functioning website and like a learning management system and all sorts of portals and stuff like that. But I think we would have lost something in the process, lost a lot in the process. And I think that taking the approach that we are, which is really just building kind of grassroots with a community first, like a lot of our sessions are just literally Google Meet video calls. And like we are eventually going to have our own learning management portal and system with structured courses and token gated and all of that. That's like, that'll come when it makes sense for us to invest in it and build up to that. Like this does the job for now. Like we can engage with the community, we can help them, and we can talk and run lessons and all that kind of stuff. So I absolutely don't regret not taking VC funding. And again, nothing against it. It's not evil. And maybe in the future we might. I'd say it's less than 1% chance. I'm very, very keen on not doing VC funding because we're very community focused and are wanting our incentives to be aligned with the community. But, you know, you never say never, basically. Well,
I mean, where you're at now, it doesn't seem like you'd need the VC funding at this point, right? It's already gotten to the point where it's big, and you've kept, this is community growth. I feel like the community is driving the success of all these projects. As much as you guys, not to take away from you guys, but the way you invest back in the community, your community gets really involved with the DAOs, with the votes, with everything, and just they're all voicing what they want, and you guys are actually listening and you're growing together. Whereas you see a lot of other NFTs and a lot of projects that come up, it really is just a pretty picture that they're going to flip later on. There's no connection with it. There's no vibe. But I don't feel like anyone who's got a 333 or a Zen is ever going to sell their NFT. Like, it's just, it's a way of life now. So it's cultish status, if that makes sense. Yeah.
And we have a really strong, passionate community, and there is a lot of retention. And a lot of people are basically say that. They're like, I'm never going to sell my token. I'm going to always have one. I'm always going to keep one. We haven't actually got a DAO yet, but we definitely do want to at some point implement that. It's like a future thing just because they're a little messy and complicated. But while we don't need VC funding, it's not like it still is, we're still building up revenue streams to make sure that we're sort of self-sustainable as a business, like a year from now, 2 years from now, where we're doing fine, we're surviving, we've got a decent treasury and runway, but there's 20 of us now working on the whole team. That gets expensive, and we have other expenses, and so we have secondary royalties coming in, and we have the media stuff that's bringing in a bit of revenue, but we need to sort of bulk that up and build that out. And I think that's what the next 6 months are all about. It's, you know, getting to PFP project and raising a little bit of revenue that way, and building up our media pipelines and increasing those revenue funnels. And just, yeah, I'm very optimistic and confident, but I'm not like, it's not 100% locked in that like we're safe. We still have to work pretty hard, very hard. Yeah.
Well, especially in this macroeconomic with everything that's going on, income is king. Cash is king in a recession, and bills need to be paid. And I feel that, you know, you guys are doing things a bit different because your mission is to help people navigate in an increasingly digital world and empower as many individuals as possible. Obviously, Web3 has been a huge learning curve for yourself to then establish yourself as an educator in this field. One question I actually have is, how did the family take all this, man? When you first got in, I mean, you are a member of the Bored Ape Yacht Club, which we'd love to talk a bit more about too, on your thoughts with all of that. But how did the families first start taking this? I mean, obviously Zen is where it is now, a year in, and I'm sure everyone's very proud of your success, and so they should be. But that first initial, I guess, bridging your family and parents, your mother's taking the 30 days into NFTs at the moment. How did they take all this? I mean, what was the initial, guys, I bought a monkey, guys, I'm trading JPEGs, you know, oh my God, these goblins done X. How was all that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. It was very, I mean, it was all like, it was just like a joke almost at first. Like February, March, April, May, really of last year, it was, all right, so, well, the thing is, I was a professional poker player before, so I was already doing something non-traditional. And in many ways, it was kind of a step up, or maybe a step sideways. I was like, I was doing something weird and zany, and it got them, they finally got around to poker, and now I was doing this, and they're like, okay, what is he getting into now? And then, you know, it was just a bit of a laugh at the first couple of months, and like, I was buying Zed Run horses, and I was like joking, I'm a digital horse racer now, and like, that's what I'm doing. And like, at that point, I wasn't sure, is this something that I'm going to be able to do 6 months, a year, 5 years from now, or is this just a fun phase thing, and I'll go back to poker? And then as time went on, and as things started to get a little more successful, and my content started getting out there, and then definitely in the lead up and launch of Zen Academy, that's when I think everyone just started to see, oh, okay, there's really something here. This isn't a fad. This isn't a phase. But definitely for the first few months, it was all like confusion and what the hell is that? And there's still a bit of that now, but they're very accepting and supportive for sure.
Yeah, that's super important. I remember having the conversations with my mother because we have our in real life businesses, crypto for us. I mean, I got in a couple of years ago in that big bull run. I was a Safe Moon OG, sold the bag out way too early for that one. That would have been a retirement bag first 1,000 holders, but it's that learning curve. And I love that the Zen Academy can, at least for all those new people coming in, can potentially let them avoid those pitfalls that we had, because I didn't even know what a stable coin was. I was consolidating into BNB at $800, and then that all dropped and went down to about 300. So you're losing multiple profits along the way. But it's a super hard area to sort of navigate and stuff. But I feel you're going more deeper. I mean, I can see in your roadmap, we have the media side, we have the academy side, but there's also a little thing on the side here of consulting, events, giving back, ventures. Do you see Zen Academy helping in the future to onboard Web2 businesses into Web3? Is that something you guys will also look down the line?
Yeah, I think probably in like the next 3 to 6 months, we really want to have this established Web3 consultancy firm, this consultancy arm that really does that B2B work, where there's so many businesses and brands that want to enter this space and they need help like from the ground up. They need to get their team up to speed. They need to learn how to navigate this space and what they need to do. And I think that we're pretty well positioned to be able to help them in that capacity. But it's that's a pretty significant revenue stream for the business, but it is sort of like a lot of work to get there. But we're sort of prioritizing it because we think that there's such a great demand, and that's likely to stick around for the next few years just as this space continues to evolve.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a huge market. I think there's a lot of... Do you feel that there might be opposition from a lot of the Web2 companies in understanding Web3, getting into these digital wallets? Because me looking back at like the Adidas drop, at the Gucci drops, Web3 to me was, a lot of it was rewarding your participation in a network. Blur just did an airdrop. We saw a massive season of airdrops. We understand what this is about, you know, using a digital wallet, logging into a website, all that stuff. Do you think that there will be much opposition from Web2, or do you think we've got a few years before the Web2 sort of world really understands the power that token-gated things can do, NFTs can do? Are we a way off from all of that, do you think?
I don't think so. I think we're starting to see it already. Like, we've had a lot of companies dip their toes in, and I mean, Starbucks announced their massive thing, Reddit, obviously, Nike, Gucci. There's a lot of big brands, Pepsi, that are into the space now in one capacity or another. And I think that's almost like a stamp of approval or level of validation now for all of sort of this, the mid-tier companies that are going, oh, okay, now everyone is sort of exploring this Web3, this metaverse, this digital world. Maybe we should as well. So I think that maybe a year ago it was very early and skeptical and people were like hesitant to do it. Now I think as more and more companies and brands enter, especially now that Ethereum is like proof of stake and the environmental impacts aren't really negative at all, really at all. And now I think we're going to see more and more companies want to enter.
Yeah, I sort of feel the same. I'm trying to just gauge in my mind. You know, I get so deep in my meme side and degening side, but I try to keep that overall view and that holistic view of what is happening in the market. Generally, for everyone listening, guys, when your mother's talking about Bitcoin, it usually can be the top. And I start selling. It's a good top signal. You know, grandma's coming through and just sort of like, you know, I need to buy some Bitcoin. We're already selling. Looking at the macro environment at the moment, when I look at sort of everything, I'm taking into account the potential of World War III. I'm taking, you know, supply chain issues, COVID. Here in Australia, you probably know everyone got paid to stay at home. And obviously that's got huge effects now as to what's happening. Yeah. How are you seeing this macro environment? Is there light at the end of the tunnel? Are we in this for the next few years? Everyone talks about the bulls, but I mean, during the bears, we build, we're educating. We're trying to prepare for that next bull run. Is there that light, man? I mean, coming from where you're playing in this, you know, education network and who you are as a trader and, you know, we all know you. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, the real answer is I have no idea. I think anyone that says that they know is a little, yeah, probably shouldn't be listened to. But I don't see a light in the immediate future. Or like maybe another way of saying it is my sort of medium-term outlook is pretty bleak. Maybe in the short term, things pump and then go down and pump and go down. But I'm a little afraid for the state of the future, honestly, largely is because of AI. I think AI is really going to disrupt lives in a way that most people aren't prepared for yet. It's sort of like going to replace so many jobs, and that's going to just cause this catastrophic flow-on effect. And I don't think governments are prepared for that, and I don't think individuals are prepared for that.
Mm.
I don't think businesses are prepared for that. And I think that it is really going to be this spanner in the works that really throws the world into a bit of a loop in the next, I don't know, 1 to 4 years. So, yeah.
You're right about mentioning, I mean, that AI. We just seen a massive run on AI art, Midjourney through Discord. I jumped on Midjourney. So for everyone listening, guys, something like Midjourney, AI art, we're literally typing in a few words. I could type in red, blue, castle, and it's going to give me a nice picture. Some people write a story, and I was so amazed as the people that did write the story, what the level of artwork that they were getting. I mean, you're getting one-of-ones that potentially could be sold on secondary marketplaces. I'm bullish, but at the same time, I'm concerned because I also see that this technology is rapidly approaching. We will see massive loss on jobs. We'll see all these types of things. And yeah, it's a really, really scary situation. It's exciting. I mean, I love technology. How do you think people are going to navigate that? Do you feel that AI art could take away from your genuine artists who've put in 20 years into their craft, and now Shaheen is here dropping one-on-ones on the marketplace? How do you feel about it? Is it like the Wild Wild West right now?
Is there going to be some level of resentment maybe?
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, I think it's really scary for artists. It depends on the type of art and the artist, and I think that we'll be able to use AI to sort of, I think the future is sort of artists plus AI. AI is a tool just like Photoshop is a tool, just like Procreate, just like a camera is a tool. And currently it sort of seems like it's definitely very different because it can recreate things just by text. But I think that the future art will be sort of a human plus AI, using AI to sort of create something. Maybe they create the base layer and then the background images, and then they come in and use their brush and sort of add their own touches to it and tweak it and change it. But yeah, I would be slightly afraid as an artist, as honestly as anyone. Like AI is really going to be able to do any human's job.
Mm.
I don't know if you've seen the podcast between Joe Rogan and Steve Jobs. Like this is AI created podcast episode of... They brought someone back from the dead, basically. And sure, some of the stuff he said was a bit off the mark, and you could tell, but some of it like was very cohesive, and he was making good points. And it's like, this is where we are now. Imagine where we're going to be in a few years' time. And like, video is being created. It's not just... up until now, computing has largely been used for like right brain stuff, like calculators, spreadsheets, databases. And the people who were more creative and said, oh, we'll be able to have our creativity and we can write poetry and stories. And now AI is writing poetry and telling stories and creating copywriting and creating art. And I think that everyone should be a little afraid and a little forward thinking about how they're going to sort of, well, what are they going to do in 5-10 years, basically?
Well, I think the scary part, and exactly what you're saying, clicked for me a few years back. I don't know if you ever saw The Russian Robot, and he escaped, once but twice. So this was a robot with AI, and they had it in Russia, and they were keeping it in a facility, and it escaped and got out. So they got it, they brought it back, they closed that escape route and everything. It ended up escaping again, and that's when they realized, shit, this AI is moving too fast for us. And then when you got people like Musk who are embracing it, but then they're also saying, you've got to be very careful, we've got to limit it. It's either everyone is super prepared and wary for it, or everyone is completely clueless. And there's no middle ground. It's blissfully unaware, or you're scared of what's going to come.
Yeah.
So it's kind of crazy.
Well, it's super curious because I think it's going to force us to the question of at what stage would humanity then join with the robots and AI?
Mm-hmm.
When you have AI that's smart enough to disable safety protocols and chips and all this stuff. And guys, whoever's listening... jump on, there's a Joe Rogan podcast. I forgot the guy's name, but I'll pin it all up there, where they talk about type 1 to type 5 civilizations. Now, we just know that they digitally immortalized William Shatner. That took about 10 days. I think it was like hours and hours. So what they did was ask a whole bunch of questions. But what will happen is future generations, if I passed away, you could have my picture on a wall, talking the way I talk, learning the way I learn, and my children can get you. It's your digital immortality.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think people realize, and it wasn't until I got into the blockchain technology, and at first, you know, I was hitting memes. I didn't know much about the technology. Once I looked deeper, I knew this was life-changing. We have land in, you know, Sudan that is untenable, that we can now know who the owner is. We have insurance protocols in Kenya that as soon as the government declare a natural disaster, that protocol is paying people out. It's truly bringing wealth in a certain sense to the every Joe Blow. But right now we're in a wild, wild west. We have all these things happening. That's why I really vibe with anyone that is putting out education. Anyone whose mission is, it's not about the money. We've all made money. We all know the little tricks. There's memes or you can flip NFTs. Yeah, we can do that. But building a foundation for the future generations, because I'm scared for my son. I'm scared that can he buy a job or can he get a job? Could he buy a house in Sydney? I mean, bro, you know the prices in Sydney. It's just astronomical. I believe that blockchain technology, crypto, I mean, we talk about the next 10 years and we're talking, guys, learn Solidity, be a dev, get a job in Solidity, whatever it is, start learning coding. I really vibe, like I said, with the Zen Academy and what's happening. But I'm curious to know the Zen give back. What were your plans? I mean, you're a super giving guy. Everything you guys have done is for your community. What more can you give back? What are you guys looking at doing for your community?
Yeah, it's just, that is just sort of the general thread that we want to run through and what we do, and just to make sure that we're always thinking about how to give back, be charitable, altruistic. So up until now, we've made several donations to Ukraine. That's one of the largest things, and a couple other charities over the last year, and we're going to keep doing that as we generate revenue and profit as a business. We're going to keep donating to various charities. The other thing is we have a scholarship fund, and that is... it's funded. So I did these courses with Nas Academy, which is an online like masterclass style website. And it was paid courses. It was free for our token holders, but then other people were paying for them. And then 50% of the revenue from that came to me. And I put all of that into the scholarship fund that we're then using to basically support artists and creators in this space through a variety of initiatives. So it's just, that's like the two things really that we're doing, but I'm sure we'll have other ideas in the future. Maybe we go out in the real world and meet people and educate them and tell people in underprivileged areas how to like get on to blockchains and set up a wallet and we can help them get started or whatever it might be. There's so much that we can do to give back, and it's just on there so we remember to always keep doing it.
Well, you've got the DJ and Aussie Apes behind you, my friend. Anything we can do this side of the world, man, we're happy to represent.
Appreciate it.
And thus also being, you know, a Bored Ape Yacht Club holder. I mean, we're mutant holders. I love your PFP. I resonate with the apes. I'm an ape at heart. I would love to talk to you a bit about the Bored Ape Yacht Club. A lot of fun recently going on. We had a terrible minting experience with the Other Side Deeds. Mm. When did you first come across the Bored Ape Yacht Club?
Actually, the first time I ever heard about them was a few hours after they minted out, because I have a group chat with some friends and one of them posted about them, I think, the morning after they minted out and said that he was up late last night. He minted a few and it looks like they're running or something like that. And yeah, they sort of went up decently. It took them like a week before they minted out. They didn't mint out all right away, but in the last day, the vast majority minted out in that last day. And anyway, that's when I first became aware of them. And then they just started popping up on Twitter everywhere, here and there. And then I didn't buy in, but a few weeks later, the FOMO basically got me. And I was like, all right, everyone is talking about these apes. I got to get one. And that's when I finally bought in.
Yeah, I'm spewing, man. I was there. I'd never heard of the Bored Ape Yacht Club. And for everyone listening, guys, there is so much going on in this space. I mean, people are minting Bored Apes, and Shaheen over here is minting indie games, Gloomy City, buying apartments in these metaverses that just never came to fruition. But I did jump in later on as with my mutant. I got him just before the pump at about 7 ETH. I was really, I wouldn't say lucky, because I feel it was a strategic buy, because I was reading, I was looking, and I remember having conversations with my sister, who we'll call the Minister of Finance, because that's pretty much what she is in my household, and saying to, because I'll just mint everything, and I was just saying to her, I mean, I think these are going to run. There's so much going on. To me, the Bored Ape Yacht Club was the pinnacle of the NFT world. Nothing really brought the noise across. We had issues with NBA Top Shot. You had guys like Pranksy and Dingaling come through, sweeping floors. I think one of them had 1,000 Bored Apes at a stage.
Pranksy had 1,000, I think 1,250 he minted. And wow. I think he literally sold them all and then finally bought back in. And Dingaling, I think, had or maybe still has 100, 110 of them.
Yeah, I was having a sneaky look at his wallet the other day, yeah, and he's still holding like 110. Yeah. I heard along the grapevine Dingaling was Australian, but I'm not too sure. I mean, obviously that's someone who'd probably never dox himself, which you wouldn't want to be doxed at that level of NFTs. Do you feel we've seen the heights for the Bored Ape Yacht Club? Do you feel that the floor that we saw during this last run, would we see it, you know, run further? Personally, I feel myself, there's so much more room for the Bored Ape Yacht Club to go. We're so early. But what's your thoughts as a tier one holder? I mean, you're in the top 10,000 holders. For everyone listening, we have a collection of 10,000 Bored Apes and we have a collection of 20,000 Mutant Apes, both giving you access to the Bored Ape Yacht Club, obviously boards being the top tier. But what's your thoughts? I mean, can we see more? Is more coming from the Bored Ape Yacht Club?
I would suspect yes. I mean, this is, I mean, they raised, was it $450 million earlier this year? They have some of the largest people backing them, supporting them, helping them build out their ecosystem. We absolutely haven't seen yet the close to the last of them. I think that they've got their work cut out for them. They're being very ambitious in their goals and trying to build this other side metaverse. It's huge, and a lot hinges on the success of that, I think. Even though it's kind of not necessarily directly related to the Bored Ape Yacht Club, it's very closely related, but the kind of two separate projects now going on in parallel. Obviously, there's a lot of things going on in terms of like the in real life stuff. They're doing Ape Fest every year. I think they're building an actual clubhouse in Miami or somewhere. Yeah. And they're doing some really exciting things, and I imagine that they'll remain a pretty significant fixture in the space for forever. Whether and when they reach the same heights that they had in April, I am not sure. Like that, it could be a couple of years from now, could take 10 years, it might never happen, but I could definitely see it happening, and I wouldn't be shocked at all if it did happen, but I also wouldn't be shocked if it didn't happen.
I think it's definitely a long-term hold, right? So as long as you're going to hold it and eventually give it to your son or your daughter, you can't go wrong with it. With a blue chip of that level.
So,
yeah.
But just on that point as well, how much would you attribute, I've been here the whole time.
So that's John, NFT Sydney.
I just wanted to say, how much would you attribute, like, you know, your community? I guess, you know, obviously the Bored Ape brand is very reputable, but how many people did you meet? How much value did you get from the community in those early days that led to where you are now? Because I feel like that's a really underrated aspect of NFTs. Everyone's always looking at floor price. They're not looking at the people you meet and the experiences you have along the way. So curious to hear your journey. Because obviously, I just actually checked your wallet now. You actually bought it for 0.69 ETH, which is a pretty nice price to get in at. You know, still up 100x or something like that, ETH-wise. What was it like in those early days? Because obviously, it wasn't the, you know, six-figure NFT that everyone wants to have, and you put a tweet out about it, and you get all the thousands of followers coming along. What was it like in those early days of the club?
Yeah, it was a very strong, passionate community. Like, it was... You would go on Twitter, and if you had an ape, you'd get like 1,000 followers in a day. And like within a week, you'd get like 2,500. And it was just like a really great way to sort of kickstart your sort of journey in the space, to sort of chat with others. You could connect and talk to lots and lots of people. And it was really, it was fun. Those first couple of months were really, really fun. And then I think as time went on, everyone sort of went on to do their own things in the space. And so there is definitely still a core community in the Bored Ape community, but a lot of us now, like myself, I have my own projects, and other people have their own projects, or other people are doing this, that, and the other. And a lot of people from the early days, they sold off because the price went up so high, and then so you had this different community form where a lot of people bought in at 10 ETH, 20 ETH, 50 ETH, 100 ETH. Now you have a very different makeup of holders compared to like thousands of degens that bought in at mint or 0.5 or 1 ETH. Now you have like a large percentage of people that paid 50 ETH, and it's just a very different community breakdown. Obviously, mutants coming in also changed it up and fixed it up, mixed it up a little, where now you have many thousands more coming in at a pretty reasonable price point at the time of mint. So that was a lot of excitement and energy injected back into the Yacht Club, and I think it was such a great move by them to do that, just to sort of expand the ecosystem and keep that going. But the vibes are definitely different from the early days, but I think that happens with any community after it goes the way that the Bored Apes did.
I think credit to them as well. A lot of NFTs will come out and then they will try and bring more attention by bringing out a second tier or an extra add-on. The only ones I've seen do it really well and sort of revive the original NFT is Bored Ape Yacht Club. Once the hype died down around the apes, mutants sort of brought everyone back to them, brought them to the forefront again. And then Cyber Kongs with the babies, and they came out, and then the VXs and the play to earn. A lot of other NFTs will try that and kind of fall a bit to the wayside. I mean, Doodles had a lot of hype with their add-ons, kind of fell away, Cool Cats, all that sort of stuff. So it was really exciting to see how well they were able to pull it off. They're just continually at the forefront, always there in your face. So you got to give credit to them for that at least.
Well, yeah, 100%.
I wanted to ask, I mean, you know, Cyber Kongs being another OG in the space, doing really well with their play and collect game. I just won an NFT on the Claw the other day. We talk a lot about Cyber Kongs. I really want to ask you a question on the metaverse for the Bored Ape Yacht Club. Being a holder, I feel that it's a play they necessarily didn't need to do. Do you think this was a wise move, stepping into the metaverse? I mean, we've seen sandbox delays multiple times. A metaverse is a massive undertaking. Do you think it was a wise move for the Bored Ape Yacht Club to step into the metaverse the way they did?
Probably not, honestly. I don't think they needed to. I think that they would have done excellently without it. It sort of created this thing that now, again, there's a lot of expectation around it, and it's very difficult for them to live up to that. And yeah, I mean, it's ambitious. If they pull it off, it could sort of see them go way to heights that they, you know, we couldn't have dreamed of before. But it does introduce a lot more failure, whereas beforehand it was like they had this excellent thriving community and they didn't necessarily have to do too much and it still would have continued to thrive. But now they've just added this new massive curveball effectively. And it's too soon to tell whether it was a good decision or not, but it was definitely a risky, ambitious decision.
I mean, as a holder, and you being a holder as well, getting in the time that I got into, for everyone listening, full disclosure, I received an airdrop, and thankfully that airdrop was pretty much the value of what I bought my ape for. So I was very lucky in that regard. For me, it's sitting back now and watching what plays out. There were two NFTs, full disclosure, for everyone listening to, and I've said it time and time again, I don't sell Kongs and I don't sell apes. I'm holding, diamond handing, whatever you want to call it. But I know we're running a bit on time. I was going to ask, I'm super curious, Blur.io, I mean, great airdrop that came through. I sort of find with airdrops, it's super bullish in a bull run because everyone wants money, and then can be a bit of demise of a project in a bear market. I'm super bullish on Blur.io. Clouded, one of our good friends here in Sydney, used it for the first time the other day, said the experience, the UI was absolutely amazing. Would love to know a bit more about your role being the Chief Zen Officer at Blur. You must truly believe in the project to put your name there, especially in the bio on Twitter. Could you give our audiences just a quick rundown on the Blur marketplace and why this is a real challenger for OpenSea and looks rare and things like that?
Just before you start with that, is it true that you actually said no originally when they first approached you?
Yeah, it is. So basically what happened is someone reached out to me, I can't even remember who it was, I think someone from Paradigm in December last year, and said, asked if I wanted to invest in Blur in the seed round. And I was interested. I said, you know, I'd love to hear more, tell me about it. And then I learned about what they were building. I was like, oh, this sounds cool. And I said, yes, okay, I'll invest in it. And that was like December, January last year. And then in, I think it was March or maybe early April, they reached out again and said, you know, Blur is looking for someone to be sort of an ambassador, someone to sort of help with growth and public messaging and Twitter spaces and that kind of stuff. And I said, I appreciate that, but like, I that's not something I like to do. No, thank you, but, you know, appreciate it. And, you know, I think it was a day or two later that they came back and Casey said, I think you should really just, you know, take a call, have a call with the founder, see what he's about. This is, I think, a potentially tremendous opportunity. They'd really love to work with you. And then I was like, okay, let me have a call. I'll go. And was just basically just blown away by the founder, Pac-Man. Got to chat with him about their plans and basically really believed in what they were building and the reasons they were building it for and their ethics and all that kind of stuff. And then it's a fairly small team, I think, 7 to 10. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what it was at the time, but fairly small. And he said that something he always wants to do is if anyone is going to join the team, he wants to meet them in person and just make sure that, you know, you get along well, especially for a fairly significant role. And I said, okay, great, sure. And then, so he's from America and I'm in Europe, and I was actually traveling around Spain on a holiday with my fiance and her mom around there. And he was like, all right, just, you know, tell me where you're going to be, pick a day, I'll come and fly in and meet you. So he came to the south of Spain. We had dinner and just that was it. And then he left the next day and it was like a really great experience getting to meet him and talk to him, and gave me more confidence and I think gave him more confidence. So then I came on board. And so what a chief Zen officer is, obviously it's sort of a made up title, but it's you get a lot of that in Web3. Mm. It's basically some sort of hybrid between like an ambassador and an advisor, where I help them with some of the strategy around, you know, marketing and communications and things like that, and some of the decisions they make, just given how generally in tune I am and involved I am with the market. And I usually have my finger on the pulse, but then also they wanted someone to be like a little more public and sort of like having it in my Twitter profile and hosting Twitter spaces for them and stuff like that. And and I mean, what Blur is, it's basically sort of like the NFT marketplace for advanced traders. And so when the best example is you think of like regular coin marketplaces, you have your Coinbase, you have your Binance, you have your FTX, and like Coinbase is for super beginners. There's nothing advanced, there's no leverage trading as far as I'm aware, no perps and that kind of stuff. And then on FTX, it's super advanced and sophisticated, and there's all sorts of crazy shit that you can do, but you know, beginners shouldn't necessarily go there first. And so Blur is kind of that for NFTs. And yeah, they really nailed it with the UI, UX. I think the user, that's one of the things that really sets them apart from all the other marketplaces. They really built for speed and for like design in mind from day one. So yeah, that's been a really fun and exciting journey.
So Blur really aligned with a lot of your core values and ideas, and that's, do you find that in your role now you can help direct it to stay more with this vision that they originally had? Because you see a lot of companies come into Web3 and then eventually they start to change their path and become something else they never set out to be. So do you find you can steer the ship a bit better in that regard?
I'm sure I could, but like I mean, I'm very involved. I'm in the Slack. I see all the comments. Like I'm part of every conversation, but it's the ship doesn't need steering because Pac-Man, the founder, or like him and Gallagher, they're both co-founders. They're just really, really smart. They're really switched on and they're really just ethical people. So they're really trying to, that's what makes me so comfortable. I don't really have to or feel like I need to get involved anywhere. It's like they make good decisions and I'm like, yeah, okay, this makes a ton of sense. I like this, and it gives me a lot of comfort, like, because aligning my name to them, I don't have to worry, oh, they're going to go out and just drop something that the market's going to hate, and then my personal brand is going to get tarnished. But I don't really have that fear because I trust them, and so far they've made excellent decisions, and I think that they're going to continue to do that, yeah.
I think it makes a big difference, like coming and meet, sitting with you in real life, creating, having that meal, which breaks huge boundaries. I'm super bullish on the fact that you're involved. It happened with me with the consortium key and meeting the Bogart in real life and having dinner. And, you know, that was just like, you know, we vibe.
It's an affirmation.
It's an affirmation.
You can't lie face to face, right?
No, you can't.
You can't hide who you are.
Man,
yeah.
Generally, when we wrap up the podcast, we always ask the same question. Mental health is a huge thing. A lot of people are suffering. Do you have any tips? I love your favorite quote by the Stoic philosopher Seneca as well. any tips on mental health, man? It's a tough market. How can we get through this? How can our listeners, you know, adapt their strategies and keep their mental health at the forefront of what we do?
Yeah, I love that you're asking this question. It's so important, especially in this space. I think taking breaks is the thing that I would say is super needed for everyone. And whether you're a founder or you're a trader, or you're a degen, you're a builder, you're an artist, you're a collector, the space is like 24/7 and there's FOMO getting you from every angle and it's really all consuming. And you can get really caught up in, you know, mistakes or missing out on money or there's just a lot of crap. And I think that it's important to take breaks. So whether it's taking the weekends off or taking, you know, a week off every couple of months, or just like resetting your brain and not just being plugged in 24/7 to Twitter and Discord and, you know, all of the tracking sites and remembering it's okay to sort of like disconnect and miss something. Mm. It'll probably be better for you in the long run. It'll absolutely be better for you in the long run.
I love it, man. I love it. And for everyone that's listening at the moment, I'd have to just make something super clear. Take a chance on yourself. I'll be honest, man, this is one of our crowning moments here at the Degen Aussie Apes to have someone like you and your caliber and what you've done here on our podcast, because we never envisioned that these things would be possible, and it's Web3 that has really brought us all together. And I just want to thank you at the bottom of our hearts, man. You've, you know, made two bold guys and one guy with hair over here, man.
Mate,
you know,
Western Sydney boys, super very happy.
That's awesome.
For everyone that's watching, listening, I mean, subscribe, follow Zenica. We'll put all the Twitter handles in there. Check out the Zen Academy. Join up. Take your education in this space seriously, because this is the difference on one thing that can create intergenerational wealth for you and your family moving on for the rest of your lives.